Hey guys, welcome to Drama Darbar. Today we have Bandra Girl and Deepak, our guest, to talk about Misang. It's one of the shows all three of us watched recently, and you can see it on Netflix and Viki. Also, the English title of the show is Incomplete Life. I'll give it back to B to introduce Deepak and tell us a little more about the show.
Sure. Welcome, Deepak. We are really excited to have you on the show. For listeners, Deepak Murugesan is a consultant by day, but a co-host of the Other Banana podcast by night. So we are really excited to have him on the show to talk about Misang. A little bit about the show. Misang is actually based on a webtoon, and it's one of the shows which focuses on the office life. And it's based in a fictional company called One International that does international trading and exports. And it's about a guy who has just a high school degree and was playing Go or Baduk professionally, and how he uses the strategies of the game in his real life in the workplace. It's super interesting. We're excited to talk about it. So with that, Deepak, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your K-drama journey, and how you started watching Misang?
Hey, B. Hey, it's great to be on Drama Darbar. We've talked about talking about Korean dramas before, but I'm glad that you guys are doing the show and I'm able to talk about what I've done, what I've seen on the show. I'm a relatively new arrival to K-dramas. I've sort of only begun watching them since maybe in full zest. I've sort of begun watching them only since the pandemic has started. But Misang was my gateway K-drama, if you will. It's the show that started me on watching K-dramas. I just finished watching Parasite at the local theater. So just before everything shut down where I am, Parasite was playing at a local independent theater, and it's a theater that I patronize, so I went there and watched it. And I was really hankering for more dramas about Asian work culture that talked about the class divide and, you know, things of that nature. And when I was looking, Misang probably fit the bill. It ended up being a lot more positive than Parasite, but it actually scratched my itch for having a show that actually talked about work and work culture in Korea. And then since then, I've watched a number of films. I've expanded into historical. I've expanded into watching just, you know, regular romances and stuff. So Misang was my gateway K-drama, like I said. And I've watched, I think, probably six of them so far. It's Okay to Not Be Okay. I'm watching Run On right now. I've completed Startup. Kingdom and Rookie Historian Gu Haerang. So those are the ones that I've watched completely. But I'm looking forward to watching more as and when time permits with work and home related stuff.
That's great, because Run On was a recent one and it has the same main lead, Im Si-won. That's his name. And in this show, in Misang, he plays the character of Jeong-rae. I think I'm pretty much saying it wrong. It's Jeong-rae. And I know, like, there is a little bit of a fun take on this, because in the show, since it's a workplace drama, the boss, or most of them, imitate his name to be Cray, which almost means like okay or yes, or, you know, I remember his immediate the boss talking about it. I do want to take a few minutes to just introduce the characters of the show. There is Kang So-ral, whose name is An Young-gi in the show, and she also comes in Revolutionary Love. It's one of the unseen gems, and she's the only, there are like four office interns who get recruited, and she's the only female woman intern who's there. The other one is Baek-hee, and he's like one of my favorites, to be honest, in this particular show. His character is so layered, and, you know, he actually, in the end, he comes out and, you know, blossoms and stuff like that. So he's seen on Scarlet Heart and When Camilla Blooms and River Where the Moon Rises right now. The other one is Byun-ho Yohan as Seok-yul. And his most famous one that you've seen him previously is Mr. Sunshine. He's the fiancé of Aishin, who ultimately she doesn't marry. But then there is the team lead. And the team lead is, like, I think, one of all of our favorite. I don't know about you two, but at least my favorite character with his, you know, he just backs people up and he has his... He's the backbone of the team, kind of a thing. So that's Sungmin as Sangshik, and there is the deputy manager Dongshik, who's almost like the I wouldn't say the clown, but you know, like, he needs a lot of attention, and you know, the backup of the team lead. That as Major is the lady manager of Team One, and she is the other woman character in this show because there are not a lot. So these two are recurring, kind of. So those are like just the top high level characters. As I told you, there are four interns and it's about their teams and stuff. And predominantly the show is set about the team three, as we call them in the show.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me was I always contrast Misaeng with Startup. There is the startup is the, you know, it's the new age or the new technology type work situation where you're bootstrapping and you're sitting in some Y Combinator
fancy
type
offices.
Yeah, you're sitting in some Y Combinator type, you know, utopia, and there's coffee delivered to you whenever you want, kind of thing, right? Like the confines of where Misaeng transpires are so different from where Startup transpires. There's this boxy cubicles, old school, old office situation, which I thought was great. It's the work situations that I came up through. I'm considerably older than the people in their 20s and 30s who are working in cool tech startups now. So it reminds me a lot of old world businesses that, you know, just don't get the same press anymore because the tech world gets a lot of the press these days and because of how well they're doing. The second thing is that as a consultant, I've seen a number of these businesses navigate the transition into something new. These are usually oligopolies. There's like two or three big companies in the space. They're tried and tested strategic moves that everyone tries, and occasionally someone has a huge brainwave, right? Like, that's how usually these things work. And I thought it was a really good place to contrast against Baduk, which is very much about gaining space, strategies, how do incumbents hold position versus the others and so on and so forth. So it was a very interesting parallel that comes through with sort of an old world business and a strategy game that depends on that kind of thing. So that's one of my favorite things about Misaeng. I think the voiceover that does those parallels is done really well. Usually voiceovers are a crutch when you're writing a show, but it functions really well as a layover in the show.
The voiceover is done by the main lead, right? Isn't Jangre doing the voiceover?
Most of the time. Occasionally you'll get, like, during the intern presentation, you get Sokyul voiceover sometimes, right? Like, where you hear about him talking about his voiceover. But yes, it's predominantly from the point of view of the Go player, so that adds a lot of value to how you perceive the show and how this person is able to put himself in other person's shoes to see the chess moves that are happening in the workplace, even for like the most innocuous thing, right? Like, why are all of a sudden all these interns coming and asking Jangre to be their presentation partner?
Right.
It's like there's like six dimensional chess being played for that some very small, simple decision. So that's one of my favorite parts of the show, and that's why I couldn't, once I started watching, like by the third episode, I was totally hooked.
What makes Misaeng such a unique show about office work? There are many shows that are based in the office, but you rarely actually see people talking about work and doing work. What I found fascinating in the show is In every episode, they talk about one trade or one thing that they are doing, and they are a global trading company. So they are working with different countries. They are talking in different languages. They talk about the nuances of working with different cultures and countries, which is something that you will see if you're in one of these super international companies. I found that really interesting. Just the fact that they've done their research on what these trading companies do and how they function. I felt that was top notch. Like, also for me, another interesting thing and that I thought was very well crafted in the show was the politics internally between the different levels of management. There's like the interns, then there's like the first level of employees, then there's the mid-level management, then there's the senior management, how they all work together. And to me, one of the most special moments of the show that really resonated with me was actually towards the very, very end when Manager O says, as a salary man, every day I write a resignation letter and keep it just in case, because you never know when you need it. And I really felt that, right? As a working person throughout your life, you're like, I don't know what's going to happen from a politics standpoint. I don't know at what point I'm going to have to leave. I thought that was beautifully done in the show. And then the last point that I'll make before handing over is about how the different characters and the different levels also do their jobs, and not just their main jobs, but also side things around the office.
The great thing about an office space, especially in sort of these like chaebol type, you know, places, is that it's a place where multiple hierarchies meet. So there is the existing hierarchy of the corporation itself, which is, you know, executive director, director, chief, manager, you know, intern, you know, like there's six different levels already, and you haven't even gotten to the owners yet, right? And then there is the hierarchy within the interns. Which university did you go to? Which university did that person go to? How many years of work experience did you have before you come? And anyone who's been in a situation, like consulting works that way, banking works that way, right? Like anyone who's been an intern, gone through this formal rotation program that then if you do well at the end of it, you get a job. You're acutely aware of this, because when you go in, you're like, oh, which school did you go to? And like, how many of your alumni are in the office building? Like all these things like really start to matter really quickly. So the intersection of hierarchies is something that I'm just formally very interested in as someone who, you know, has teams and has to manage teams. And I just have not seen another show ever that like really thinks about this and really delivers on this in the way that Miss Aang does.
They are aware also about it. They are aware of it, you know. They discuss this when they're drinking. They're like, we spent so much time, we invested all this money to go to school, you know, we took this education. And this guy comes along and sweeps up and becomes like this hotshot, not even like a hotshot, like this famous guy who everybody wants. Like, to your point, just to act.
Yeah, that. So that's the great thing, right? It also makes sure that the social structure is brought in, yeah. Which is, you know, through Circule, and you understand the Zhangu Rei doesn't have money for more than two suits when he's an intern, yeah. And like they don't eliminate the social hierarchies as well, because these things tend to focus because they're so focused on the economics of it, they sometimes forget the social aspect of it. And somehow the show doesn't do that either. It manages to weave that in as well, where, you know, Young Yi is dealing with her own personal problems. Zhangu Rei is clearly right. From an entirely different social class than all of the other interns. And it's not like there's only two social classes. Sokyul's from a different social class. And then there are the other right. interns, there's Young Yi and Becky. And then they're in different life places. There's an intern who has a wife and a child, and so he has family concerns, whereas the others are single. So the number of different perspectives that are brought in, and I think they're only able to do this because it's a 20-episode canvas, right? So characters right. can come in and leave, and you don't need closure. You're fine. Like they sort of seed the idea in your head, and then it's fine. That's enough for you to sort of get the overall picture that they're painting. So that's one of my favorite things about the show. And then the second thing is that the personal relationships are purely context for the work. They are not the central part of the show. So if you think about Startup, for example, because you brought it up, there is an entire separate
personal
tree. Yeah, there's personal an entire triangle. Arc of the story that's entirely related to the personal relationships between the investor and the main guy. Yeah. So I think this is the first show where there is no explicit romance, or the only show that I've seen where there's no explicit romance.
Yeah, there's no romance.
Yeah, so that itself was so refreshing that they're able to write 20 episodes.
It seems like it was blossoming, but then I feel like they cut it, you know?
Yeah, because that's the thing, right? Like, it's probably very hard to date at work. Like, Becky buys her a shoe, she buys her a shirt, but it's like, touch and go, and like nothing really happens.
Nothing happens. Yeah.
So I mean, they just do it so well. They walk the line so well. It's amazing. It's one of my that's one of the other reasons why I really like the show, is that it's a show about work. Yeah. That's what it's about.
And I found that super realistic too, right? The fact that they are, even when they speak to each other, at no point do they drop honorifics, which is a very big thing in Korea too, right? They are always speaking to each other in honorifics, even though, and to your point, they're walking that line so carefully. They could have easily devolved that into an office romance, but they didn't. Because they held back, it made it seem much more realistic.
Because I think it's also the story of the manager and the team lead than also of the four people, right? Like, yes, these four people form the start of the show, but as you go through, it's more of the trio and what they are going through. And it becomes a story of team three. And these guys become, I think Becky has a lot more screen time than Yeonggi or, you know, Seokyul. Most of the time, you know, because his jealousy or envy comes, I don't want to get into that because, like, you know, the emotions that each of them have, because there is this guy who's trying to learn everything and he's obviously good at it. He learns the trade terms, he memorizes the dictionary, he knows everything. And it's just that his boss is ready to put work on him. And he's able to take on, whereas everybody else is struggling in their teams when they actually get hired. They ultimately get hired. So how the arc moves is they're all interns. Then a few of them actually, they do the presentation and four of them become employees of the company. And how that whole transforms and, you know, when they become employees, what goes on. And even there is one more part of it where because of the lack of educational background of Jeongrae, he's not able to get a full-time position. So he's a contract employee for 2 years. And when he has to, he knows his time is up. And, you know, there are so many issues with that and they're dealing with it. So I think the way it transpires to Team 3 is also the reason why you can't have an office romance in an old school thing. But you do learn a lot about, at least for me, it was like, oh, this is how, you know, like if you're an export company or a trading company, you know, like, okay, they're doing this. And there is one very funny scene where they send this guy to fish out like an octopus among seafood. I don't know. Like, you know.
Yeah. So when that's like, the thing.
Oh, what a hazing.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like when you're a conglomerate of that size, sometimes people don't even know what businesses people are doing. Right? Because all you need to do is prove out that there are sufficient margins in buying one and sort of adding a little bit of value and selling it somewhere else. And there's all sorts of things that can get lost in the cracks. Like you send 20 interns to fish octopi out of a squid barrel. Like, it just gives you so much room to write new stuff. The setting does so much of it. And the first 2-3 episodes that set up the context, right? Like the whole idea of having interns and then making one of them only a contract employee, it sets up a very clear timeline for how long the show can go. Because once that's over, like, that's it. The central conflict of the show is done. There's no reason to go back to the to the show again. So it sets up the conflict and sets up the situation really well. I think it's a great choice. And I consume a lot of content, and I haven't seen anyone that does it this well.
That talks about this, yeah. Like, while we're talking about it, Deepak, do you want to, like, walk us through, like, you know, what are the archetypes? And we have talked about all these characters a little more, but a little more, like, deep dive into, like, you know, who are the individuals, you know, ICs, and who are meant for the tree.
So the I think the show starts with about roughly 24 25 interns coming into one international, and four or five of them make the cut. After I think that's around episode three, four or five of them make the cut. And the main four interns that we sort of follow through the rest of the show for the remaining 16 or 17 episodes are Becky, who is a highly pedigreed PowerPoint expert. And as a consultant, it's a thing that I know really well. Just be coming into a place and being known as the PowerPoint expert. It's a character that I could sympathize with quite a bit. The second is Young Yi, who is the absolute ace. She, I don't know if you're allowed to curse on the show, but she GSD.
You can do whatever.
Okay, she GSD is the corporate word for it. She gets shit done. That's just her. She's just like whatever project you assign to her, the paperwork is immaculate, the execution plans are immaculate, and they usually work out really, really well.
She drives a truck.
Yeah, exactly. She drives a truck. She
drives a truck to all.
Yeah. She carries wood. She carries textiles, like heavy, heavy stuff. Like just stuff gets done when you give Yangi stuff, right? The second is Sokyul. And I think we talked a little bit about Sokyul before. This is the person who grew up as the son of factory workers, who has is very, very proud of his blue collar heritage. And over the course of his internship, he realizes that office work and factory work sort of need to coexist to deliver value to the customer. And then the last is Zhang Gurei, who is a Go player who has only a high school degree and gets the, you know, somehow magically through quote unquote nepotism, gets a shot at being an intern at one international. I think the arc that, like, you can sort of anticipate a little bit the arc of three of those characters. You can anticipate the arc of Zhang Gurei because he is the focal character. You can anticipate the arc of Young Yi because she's one of two women in the entire show. So you can understand what tribulations she would go through in a just like a hyper male environment. You can anticipate, like, the minute she gets through, you already know what lays in store for her. Sokyul, is almost like the comic foil a little bit. He's the grapevine guy. He always knows what's going on everywhere. And he comes in and adds a little bit of comic relief. But then he also has to deal with ethical issues. So he that's his arc, right? He has to deal with ethical issues and how he can't laugh away ethical issues. So he has to actually deal and confront stuff. So you can guess his arc a little bit. I think Beck Keys was the one that I really didn't expect to see in any show. And this is the show of someone who comes in with all the right credentials into an office and yet cannot deliver, right? He just cannot deliver. On paper, he's great, and yet he can't seem to impress his boss. He can't seem to get his boss to give him any work. And I think this is something that really, really is so personal, because you have to learn how to do work. You are never taught in school, however good of a university you go to. You go to Harvard, you go to Stanford, they never teach you to actually do work. Because doing work is quite different from taking a test and getting points. And that's what you do in school. And Becky's arc really fleshes that out. And it's the fact that you have to humble yourself and that you have to learn to do work is something that is so fundamental when you join a new place of work. I've never seen that articulated so well. And through the course of a character, and they do it over multiple episodes, right? Like, he's just radio silence. They let you stew in his thoughts for like two, three, four episodes. And you always think Becky's right because, you know, you've been conditioned to expect that he's this PowerPoint Excel expert. He did really well in his internship. And he just suddenly doesn't know how to do work. And this is something that I've experienced.
He doesn't get the he doesn't get the team he wants, right? So they all pitch for the team they want, except for Jeongrae. When they actually convert themselves to full-time employees, nobody gets the team they want. So Angi goes to this resources team where she has to, or one of the other teams where she, where everybody is so MCP kind. And then, you know, they don't want to work with the women. They're like, oh, these women never get stuff done. And, you know, they have that perspective. And they also change. Her whole team changes over time and they start trusting her. And, you know, that manager actually stands up for her in one of the later episodes. And that was very rewarding. And she was like super happy. She gets the projects. And I think even for Becky, he gets put into the steel team.
That's right.
Where he has to learn physical parts, what are the parts, and the process, right? He always wants to shine, but he doesn't know there's somebody on the ground actually maintaining the process, because everybody wants to be that somebody who invents things, but nobody wants to be the repairer or, you know, like, and that's Becky's.
Yeah, he says choice, something really, except, he says something so insightful. He said, steel is a slow business. You don't come in here in 1 month or 2 months and become a star. Like, that's so fundamental. Like, that's such a, rare thing to hear, you know? Like, to hear someone.
And his boss is pretty good, because he tells him, like, do this simple things first. I'm telling you to do simple things. Learn simple things. And he's like, oh, no, this is too beneath me to do this. He has that attitude towards work and... You know, but I do feel there is a little bit of a sexist thing that they make, you know, Angi the get shit done person, because I just feel like in generally women end up being, I don't know if I'm being.
So it's a double-edged sword.
Too problematic.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Like if you make her have issues, then it becomes hard to sort of write the arc. But then if you do what they did in the show, then you basically like, oh, the only way a woman can succeed is by being so much better than all of her male counterparts.
Like overworking.
Yeah. That's actually a great segue actually into the next topic I wanted to discuss.
No, wait. Yeah. We just hold the thought, because I want to talk about the manager, right? Like, because Team 3, we keep forgetting...
Dongshikin.
What's his name?
Dongshikin Sangshiko.
Dongshikin. Yeah, Sangshiko. So Manager O has this family. I want to just talk about that. Because Manager O's family, the wife, she's so supportive, right? And then she's like, he loves his kids. He has 3 kids. He loves them. And they're so happy that he gets promoted or whatever he's doing, you know, his project gets selected. They're so happy. And then he buys chicken, pizza. And the wife is like, okay, you know, you're quitting. I need to buy all of these things before you quit on employee discount. And she's like, you do what you want. You do the right thing. And because Manager O is this, like, you know, he's the manager who lights a fire in you and lets you do the work and stands there to support you. Like, it's very idealistic, but he also takes the fall for you. Like, you know, he's one of those, I thought, like, when I saw him, I was like, oh, he's very aspiring, right? Like, in the sense, you don't find a lot of people who are willing to go the wrong way or be that. And he does doubt Jeongrae in the beginning. And, you know, I thought, like,
That's a very interesting point, actually, about the managers. Like, usually, and this is a very real thing, you rarely find good managers, because a good manager is someone who doesn't necessarily care just about the team and themselves, but actually believes in training employees for the right reason and just for them being successful by themselves. So one of the episodes that I loved was the part where Jeongrae comes up with his first proposal. He goes up with great confidence and excitement and he says, I am ready to share my presentation with you. And then he reviews it and then his manager says, I'm not going to tell you where you went wrong, but I'm going to give you 100,000 won. You go out, you buy something and sell it to someone else. And I thought that was just a wonderful storyline, because that is so realistic, right? Like, you think that you know everything about selling something to someone, but when you actually go there and try to sell something, you realize the real things about the market. And I thought that was a beautiful explanation of Manager O as who he is.
And the best part about that whole thing for me was Becky gets included into that, you know, like he just gets pulled into this like drama of Jangre. But he learns about him in that course, right? They're going and selling underwear and socks in front of the sauna. And ultimately, they're unable to sell even there. And he learns a lot about Jangre in that particular event. Rather.
Yeah, so the thing is, Sangshiko, right, like, he isn't a realistically good manager. Like, he won't help you get promotions and stuff. But you will learn work under him. This is the other thing that, you know, very rarely people talk about. There are the people whom you hitch your wagon to, right? Because their star is rising. And then there are the people who will teach you work. And Sangshiko is the latter. He's not the former.
Second kind, Because like he himself can't get promoted. So it's like he doesn't have any advocacy or he doesn't have political power. And we all know how all this is very important even in corporate America, right? All of us work in corporate America. I mean, I don't think it's industry specific. I mean, whichever industry you are in, having advocacy, having political power, these are things that come naturally for humans, you know, like if you are a human, you have a conflict even with your husband, even with your parents at that level. So you will have conflicts within work and all of these things, the way it's portrayed, like some of the way all this speaks to you is actually like, oh shit, I've gone through this. And that's where you connect to the drama and you're like, okay, cool. You know, this is what we do.
Yeah. They have to crystallize that. So the reason why Sangshiko isn't sort of progressing in the organization, they have to crystallize it into sort of one event, where why he has this conflicts with the executive director. But you don't need that. They could just be like, they just don't get along. Like, that's enough, right? Like, usually.
Yeah. But you have to have reason, no? That's what dramas do. But I felt like it's okay not said also. They didn't need it, exactly. I would have been okay with it.
You made an excellent point about the wife, by the way. You only hear through a conversation with there's only two women whom you actually see in the, if you exclude sort of some really minimal characters who just appear for one episode, there's director's son, right? Like and then you see Yongyi. Like those are the two really recurring women characters in the show. And you learn that Sangshiko's wife actually quit her job when Sangshiko got promoted. And you only learn, you don't hear that from the wife. You hear that through a conversation with Director Sun in the office.
Yeah.
So it's, again, that's also really idealistic that you would have someone who quit their job and is like, okay with Sangshiko just like leaving and let me buy all this stuff on discount and stuff like that.
Yeah. But I do want to actually pivot this discussion because it's a great segue into how the show talks about women in the workplace and shows sexism. It's a topic that's been discussed quite a bit, but this show really shows it in different levels and nuances. The point that you just made about how Sangshik's wife quits a job because he got promoted, but at the same time, his colleague, who he really respects, manager Sun, she chooses not to quit. In fact, she has a discussion with her husband and she says, I don't want to quit. I want to do it all. And there's a very beautiful conversation that she has with Yongyi in the bathroom, because she comes rushing in one day. She's quickly applying makeup. She gets a call from her husband who says, hey, go pick up the kid. And she's like, I also have an important meeting just like you do. But then she finally says, okay, I'll go pick up the child. And she tells Yongyi, as a working mother, you are lose, lose, lose on all fronts. You're the bad wife, you're the bad mother, and you are the bad person at work. And I thought that that was spot on, whether it's in a structured company in Korea or in a startup in the US. The fact that women have to balance so many things and the expectations of women are much higher is very well shown in the show. And then another parallel is with Yongyi. When Yongyi comes in, she's easily the most accomplished. She's the most get stuff done person on the team, but she isn't given tasks because her team is so chauvinistic. They are like, oh, what will a woman do? But not only that, they also show, and which is common, you see that in a few different shows and it's well talked about in Deenin and all that. But a couple of things that the show shows that I haven't seen shown anywhere else is things like where, as the woman, she is expected to bring the coffee. She is expected to bring the printouts. They also have a discussion in the coffee room where a couple of the men have this discussion. She's standing right there. And they say, oh, when you have a disagreement with someone, you just go to the sauna and you can talk it out. And then they realize, oh, Yonggi is standing right there and she can't go to the sauna with them. This is a perfect translation to something like in the US where there's kind of this bro culture where men talk to each other about something or football or whatever, and they exclude the women from the conversation. So I thought there were wonderful parallels and things that they showed in the show.
And in general, I think Yonggi had to work a lot more harder, and she faced humility because in her previous job, her family is really working on a shoestring budget and her dad is borrowing money and all of these, you know, typical Korean drama tropes. But like, she quit the job. She's like, I couldn't face that manager anymore. And that manager actually teaches her work. And he says, when you're talking to China people, they try to not, you know, that's the context of the show. He says they try not to, they don't respect women, so sit in the center next time. He says those things, you know, so she learns how to become herself and work. And she says, he taught me work and he taught me to accept that it was okay to be a woman because my dad wanted a boy. And throughout my childhood, I've tried to impress him and all of this. And her story arc is also kind of, you know, like she has to struggle. It's survival for her. So it's just not like a thing. And
one of the big things that you're able to do because you're in a training environment is there's always this threat of ethical issues, right? Kickbacks are huge when you're doing trading. Like you scratch my back. So basically you're funneling out some funds from a contract for personal gain that should typically be going to either the bottom line of one company or the other that's doing the trading. And it comes up multiple times. This sort of ethical issue is sort of a running theme. You see multiple people worried about whether people are being ethical when doing deals over the course of the show. And the great thing about what you guys were talking about is that they don't exempt the sexism conversation from that as well. I think in the same scene that you talked about, where Director Sun rushes into the bathroom and Yonggi is there, both of them are dealing with issues, right? Like Yonggi is dealing with a particularly rough time with her managers, and Director Sun is dealing with a particularly rough time at home. And they have this sort of like brief exchange of ideas where Yonggi is dealing with sort of an ethical issue where she knows her team has done something wrong, but she's afraid to do something about it because she will bear the brunt of more retaliation if she does something. And then I think the manager son, she said something like, your conscience is not sexist or something like that, which I thought was like, that's the most profound thing that I've heard anyone say in so long. It's like, you have to deal with yourself. That kind of like, yeah. That thing is like something that I've never, you know, like, again, it's such a rare thing to sort of portray sexism, but not just leave it there, to see how it interacts and like actually affects how you do work, right? Like, it's not just a thing that's happening to you external to work. It's like actually affects your ability to be effective and ethical at work, is such a unique thing. So that's one thing. In terms of intersections between Eastern and Western work culture, I did a lot of work with Japan as part of my work. And one of the things that I found quite interesting in that process was that there's this idea of nemawashi when you work with the Japanese, which is that there is the main meeting, but there is like six side meetings that need to happen before the main meeting so that the main meeting goes well. And this happens continuously through the show. There's like a main meeting and then there's like six prep meetings before the main meeting, and then I'm like, wait, this happens, like, it's just the Japanese have a name for it. Like, you know, like the Germans have a name for everything, the Japanese have a name for it. You have to do this everywhere. It's called stakeholder management, right? Like, that's that's another sort of work wrinkle that comes through really well in the show that I have rarely seen elsewhere.
I think one thing for me is the way Western world polishes everything to make it look shiny and have the push under the carpet scenario, right? Like even they have corruption, even they have hierarchy, everything is still prevalent. It's just the words they give to it as lobbying, you know, you use lobbying instead of corruption. You kind of, the way you do it, like you have levels, you know, you can still voice your opinion, but you know, like a level 8 is different from a level 5 in all these big FANG companies, right? And then even in archaic old US companies, there are hierarchies and people still, it's somewhat similar. Yes, you have a little more agency in the difference that you can technically go approach somebody like a director or something more easily here. But in Asian, you know, in that work culture, probably you wouldn't. Like you wouldn't go approach somebody. So that's probably the difference. But one thing is, it things are all nice and shiny, but that's not true. All of us know when we work, everybody has, who has power, who has that advocacy, who has agency. Everyone knows this, you know, it's not like you don't know this and you have to deal with it. And navigating a matrixed environment is how you learn to work here. And in Asia, it's just so clear. And it's also, as you said, it's very physical, right? Like as you, the lower in the food chain you are, it's more like, you know, you do all those gestures, but as you grow up, also you entertain, but in a very different way. You take them to a private, what do you call, like a drinking room or eating food, like how he's saying, right? The meetings before meetings and sometimes side meetings and after meetings and, you know, stealth meetings. And there is like a bunch of all of this. And then that's something. And I don't know, like India having these private rooms for dining.
Yeah, I mean, that's very prevalent in Tokyo, right? Like, people don't go home before 3 a.m. in Tokyo. There's an entire sort of like meme structure of like people falling asleep on the trains because they live in some prefecture that's really far away, but they all work in like, you know, central Tokyo, like Akasaka or whatever.
Oh my God.
So that also is very, very, like, it's very common in the two work cultures. The idea of like going out to drink afterwards and sort of being in private rooms. In India, I've actually seen private rooms. I don't know if it's used for this purpose, though. I don't know if it's used for this purpose. I've never worked in a situation where it's been used for this.
Yeah, probably. It might be there. It might be coming up. Things are changing fast and we are not up to speed. So anyway, so B, do you have any closing thoughts?
So the whole show, up to about, I would say, past the midpoint or two-thirds of the show, there's no product placement. And however, the rating of the show went really, really high. And then in the last episode, they do something completely bizarre. They go to Jordan for a training. And in Jordan, they show the beauty of the country. They show all these lovely things. And they actually use Jordan as a place, as a product placement in the show. And for listeners, if you haven't listened to our previous episode, episode 7, we actually did a deep dive on product placements in Korean dramas and Chinese dramas. So please do check it out. So thank you all for listening. I'm Bandra Girl and Bandra _ Girl on Twitter. Feel free to ping us and let us know if you have any feedback. Ramya is at Ramya Prakash on Twitter. And Deepak is at Complicator on Twitter. Deepak, how can our listeners learn more about you?
Hey guys, thanks for that. You can follow me on my Twitter handle that B just mentioned earlier, or you can follow the Other Banana podcast on Twitter or on Instagram to hear our podcast. We focus primarily on Indian movies that are not Bollywood and typically the South Indian films.
Do you have any closing thoughts on Misang, Deepak?
So closing thoughts on Misang, I think like everyone should watch it. It's very much about work. And if you work in sort of a corporate setup, you will be able to relate to it pretty quickly, or even just any setup, right? Like you'll really understand some of the trials and tribulations of the characters. There's something in it for everyone who's, you know, actually having to earn a living.
That's a great way to close the show. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. And do subscribe, share the love. We'll come back to you with another episode next time.